Happers, what's up? Happy Tuesday. The Packers have a new head coach. Matt LaFleur takes over as Green Bay's commander-in-chief. We will talk about it. We'll chat a little bit about the Bucs' big win on Monday night, a little bit of national championship recap to finish us off. Maybe even a little sneak in some Mad Bum Milwaukee noise, just at least the noise of it all. But the big story of the day is Matt LaFleur is the Packers head coach. It is not official. The reports are they're zeroing in. The contract has been made unless of some crazy Josh McDaniels shit. LaFleur will be the head coach of your Green Bay Packers for next season. I love the move. If you've been listening to this podcast, if you've been reading Snowtap WI, I've been all over the LaFleur to Green Bay hire. The reason that I pegged LaFleur as the guy, as my guy, I basically said, this is the guy I want. And I said, look, some of this is opinion-based, some of this is fact-based, and who makes the most sense? And I thought LaFleur had the combination of being a young guy who could bring an innovative offense to Green Bay and also have the idea of sort of working well with Aaron Rodgers and has worked with a variety of quarterbacks throughout his years. And while none have been as good as Aaron Rodgers, I think there is a cerebralness that Rodgers can get out of LaFleur. LaFleur can get out of Rodgers. I think he's going to make him work. I think it's going to be a great relationship. I actually think the idea of having a younger coach is perfect for this Packers team. You know, it was really interesting just listening to all the takes, and I'm sure they're going to be rampant today as well. But the mention of Mike McCarthy kind of had struggled with the younger guys in the locker room, that they are different, that Generation Z is kind of different than the millennial football player or even the Gen X football player. So I think there is a age gap. And since the Packers are a younger team, they're always a younger team, having a younger guy in there, I think, will only help things. LaFleur will definitely learn from Mike Vrabel's locker room, will learn from Kyle Shanahan's locker room, Sean McVay. Those are all guys who I look at their locker room, I look at what they do on a day-to-day basis, and I say, I'm jealous of that. I was jealous of that last season, especially Mike Vrabel. I thought Mike Vrabel was a great guy. I think what he brought to that locker room was energy, excitement, and a camaraderie. And I think the Packers need all of that. I think there was a passive-aggressive locker room all season from what you've heard, what you've read. And I think this will help. I think having a guy like LaFleur there is going to work. I think the guy is going to work his ass off. I think he is going to be a top-notch hire for the Green Bay Packers. And so naturally, because Packers are the first ones to make a choice, they are the first of the eight to make their selection, which really isn't that surprising if you think about it, because the Packers have had one of the longest times to make their decision. Only the Cleveland Browns, I believe, have had a longer time to make their decision. So the Packers have been sort of doing research on the 12 guys they interviewed really since early December. I mean, LaFleur, I'm sure, was on the list in early December. And my assumption is, thinking about how interviews work, I've done a lot of them. Granted, I think interviewing for a head football job is different from interviewing for a social media job. But still, job interviews are job interviews. And it's clear to me, if you kill it in the first interview and the Packers are like, we're done, we don't need a second interview, he only interviewed with the Packers. And my assumption is he would have had other interviews lined up this week of people looking at him, and they almost didn't want to get the secret out. And you could argue, well, maybe they rushed it. Maybe they went in. But they interviewed 12 guys. So they had an opinion on everybody. And while the rumors from Ian Rapoport were Todd Monken, who is the offensive coordinator for Tampa Bay, also impressed, LaFleur blew it out of the water. LaFleur blew it out of the water, and he really did what I think the Packers wanted him to do. And that's important, right? That should matter. He came prepared, and he put his nuts on the table and said, this is how we're going to fix Aaron Rodgers. This is how I'm going to do the offense. this is what I'm going to do with the coaching staff. I would keep Mike Patton. We'll talk about the coaching staff in a second. But he laid out a game plan for the Packers. I'm sure everyone else did too. Dan Campbell, Josh McDaniels, and others all probably had a plan of attack. But at the end of the day, what Matt LaFleur brought to the table was more impressive than those guys, and that's why he got the job. And it's not a, you know, sort of a safe move by Mark Murphy. There was a national media perception. I wrote about this today. Stone Tap WI, it's a website, about how basically the national media has seen this as, well, he is riding Sean McVay's coattails. It's really disrespectful, actually, to Matt LaFleur. It is very sort of just offhand and saying, all right, well, this guy is part of the McVay tree, and that's why he's getting this job. No, he's part of the Shanahan tree. That's where it started for him. It wasn't McVay. It was Kyle Shanahan. He developed a relationship with Kyle Shanahan back with the Houston Texans when he kind of started his coaching career. From there, Shanahan, McVay, and LaFleur all worked together in Washington for Mike, Kyle's dad. So he worked for both Shanahans. He also worked for Gary Kubiak. And then he worked with Kyle again in Atlanta. And then he bounced to Los Angeles to work with McVay. So he's learned from two of the brightest minds in football. So the same national media who sucks the dick of Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan on a regular basis can't give credit where credit's due and say, all right, this guy could be pretty smart. And then they say, oh, well, he had Tennessee's offense last year, and they were just middling. They were just not impressive. Okay, say what you will about Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy was the offensive coordinator of one of the worst offenses in football history before getting the job for the Packers. Your last job doesn't always matter. What matters is who you've learned from, how you would develop your team, and all of that is noise. The last job isn't always important. He isn't always, like, in a sense, it's the opposite for like a guy like Eric Bieniemy, right? Who's getting some coaching consideration. Bieniemy is a coach, offensive coordinator for the Chiefs. He's getting a lot of buzz. Do you guys remember that he was an awful actual head coach for Colorado? I believe he was the head coach. For Bieniemy, he was not the head coach, but he was an offensive coordinator for Colorado where he had full control, and Colorado was one of the worst offenses in college football. So how do you look back at the guy's job and say, isn't he just riding the coat? That's riding the coattails. That's an example of riding the coattails. This LaFleur thing is not. I understand you want to. It's an easy narrative. It's a layup to say, oh, he's just a Sean McVay guy, and all the Sean McVay guys are getting hired because everybody wants their Sean McVay. Look, I understand that. But at the same time, it's not really the case because he's paid his dues. He is a hell of a head coach, or a hell of a coach, and I think he's going to be a really good head coach. There is a reason I thought he was the best guy for the job. And I know that Rodgers will probably reach out to guys like McVay, Shanahan, and Matt Ryan, and maybe even Marcus Mariota. Mariota might be a little too young for Rodgers to have a relationship with, but I'm sure Rodgers is going to do his sort of research on LaFleur, and LaFleur obviously has done his already on Rodgers. I'm sure those guys are going to meet. I think there is a easier to talk to with a guy like LaFleur than McCarthy. McCarthy was, you know, married with kids, and he was of another generation. LaFleur is of Rodgers' generation. I think that matters. I think that's going to help out. Trust me, they will have their disagreements. We'll see stuff on the sidelines. But at the end of the day, there is going to be a better relationship with Rodgers and LaFleur than there was with McCarthy Rodgers at the end of it. I believe that wholeheartedly. I know that might seem like optimistic and everything like that, but if it doesn't work out with those two, well, then maybe it's on Aaron Rodgers. Maybe he's that much of a difficult person to work with that I don't know if there's anyone who could sort of unsolve the Rodgers puzzle, because this is probably the right direction to go. So good job, Packers. I like that they're keeping Mike Patton. If you keep Ron Zook, I will probably puke everywhere. Like, I will do like a self-demonstrated puke. Like, just out of protest, I will puke, and probably right in front of Lambeau Field, just to let you know. So that's on your hands if Ron Zook keeps this job. There is no way Ron Zook should stay on as special teams coach. There is absolutely no way. I've also now said coach twice like Tracy Wilson in a very northern Wisconsin way. My apologies for my accent getting away on an early Tuesday morning. All right, moving on to the Milwaukee Bucks. So the Bucks had themselves a great win. So 3 games in 4 nights for the Bucks. Jazz had the same thing. They came to town. Utah was there. But the Bucks were able to pull away in the fourth quarter with a fantastic fourth. They 31-15 in the last quarter. Bucks pull away. They get the win. 114-102. Very important win for the Bucks because while the consecutive streak still alive, Bucks have not lost back-to-back games this year. What's important is they were finishing up a homestand. This was the sixth game of a six-game homestand. The Bucks go 5-1, which is great. They kind of reestablished their comfortability at the Fiserv Forum. Loaded crowd, really, really high energy crowd for a Monday night, especially with the national championship going on and everything else around it. Kind of first day back to work for some people. It was like it was a weekend crowd in there, which is great. And I think the leave on that high note is fantastic for the Bucks. They now head out on the road for 13 of their next 18 games. It is not going to be an easy stretch by any shape of the imagination for your Milwaukee Bucks. They're going to have to work really hard in keeping that sort of top spot in the East. It's going to be a challenge, but I do think the Bucks are up for it. I don't have any qualms about them heading on the road. They are not as good on the road as they are at home, but they're still okay. They only have 7 losses. They still have an above 500 record on the road, and they just are going to have to get some stuff done. I mean, that Houston game will be big. We'll talk more about sort of the Harden versus Giannis MVP race tomorrow. But it's going to be a challenge. And I think Bucks fans need to take things a little easy. They need to understand, like, hey, look, this is going to be a wild ride for a few weeks. And if the Bucks come out ahead of it, this next 18 game stretch where 13's on the road and they come out with a, let's put it at, you know, I gotta do my math here. If they come out with a like 12-6 record, like, get ready, man. That will be a, like, okay, this is legitimate. They can get to the NBA Finals sort of thing. But if they go 9-9 or they go, you know, 8-10, I'm not ready to, like, sell the farm either and say, all right, this Bucks team is unfixable. You have to expect a losing streak at some point. I love this consecutive loss stuff, but you have to temper your expectations and understand that at some point, maybe this Bucks team will hit a downward swing. It's how sports work. It's not always going to be rainbows and unicorns. But for right now, it is for the Bucks, and they have a tough game against Houston, but the other two they have with Atlanta and Washington are very winnable. So we'll talk more about the Beard versus the Freak tomorrow. That should be a lot of fun down in Houston on Wednesday night. All right, finishing up the podcast. So the national championship, college football is done for the year. And boy, did we have a surprise. Clemson blew the doors off Alabama 44-16. Clemson shuts out Alabama in the second half. Clemson had 30 unanswered points. Alabama at one point led 16-14 after a great goal line stand by the Tigers. And then after that, Clemson did not let them up to breathe. The freshman combination of Trevor Lawrence and Justin Ross were something out of movies. These guys are great. Clemson is here to stay. You could argue maybe they're the new dynasty in college football. I'm not there yet, but there will be takes of the Alabama dynasty crumbling. It is not over for Alabama. Like, Tua Tagovailoa comes back next year. He's going to be back in the mix. They have a lot of guys coming back next season. But you do wonder if the balance of power is tipping slightly to Clemson's favor with Lawrence and Ross and some other talented young players. I don't think the Clemson pass rush will not be the same next year. Trevor Maddich on ESPN Radio said the Clemson defensive line may be the best ever. And that's high, high praise. There have been some very, very good defensive lines in college football. But Ceylon Farrell, Christian Wilkins, Dexter Lawrence, who didn't even play in this game, they're all going to be drafted probably in the first 15 picks of the draft next year. I mean, they are damn good. They are a damn good defensive line, and they showed it. They were all into his face. They frustrated the hell out of him from snap one to the final snap. They were relentless. I was so impressed with Brett Venables and what he did from an adjustment standpoint on Alabama. He made Alabama look ordinary. And so, yes, there will be takes about, oh, man, the dynasty's over. But, you know, the thing is like, look, it's great to see great teams, dynasty-like teams, get their asses handed to them. I'm trying to think of what the recent example of this is. There really isn't one with the Patriots. Now, if like the Patriots go out and get their asses kicked by the Chargers this weekend, then yeah, that's a great example of it. But the only time that really happened was against the Ravens in a wild card game. But that wasn't a very good Patriots team. This Patriots team isn't really that good either. But that was a wild card game. There wasn't the implication of the final game or close to the final game. The one I can think of that just is in my head is the Cowboys in 1996. They had won three out of the last four titles. They were playing Carolina, who was second or third year in their expansion franchise, and they came to Carolina and got smacked. And we as Packer fans were all expecting Packers-Cowboys round three, but in Lambeau Field, because Packers had home field advantage. So we were expecting it to be in Lambeau in January. Never happened. And a part of me wonders what would have happened if that did occur. I think everyone would have loved to see it, but Carolina played spoiler and beat a Cowboys team that was a historic team in the NFL. And you've seen it a couple times in college basketball where sort of the juice runs out, but like that, we've seen Duke get their ass kicked before in a Final Four game, but it's been a while. I mean, the recent example was UNLV, but that Duke team was not what Duke is today, where UNLV beat them by 30 points. It was not the same sort of thing. It would just did not resonate. And so, you know, Kurt Herbstreit tried way too hard to say it's like Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson. Like, dude, that would be the case if maybe like Notre Dame came in and beat Alabama this way. This is Clemson. Clemson's right there with Alabama. And now you wonder. I mean, I think I learned a lot more about Tua than I did Trevor Lawrence. I would have thought Trevor Lawrence was good. I think there is a definite love affair now with Trevor Lawrence. He's a premier player. The people who like want him to like stay home for 2 years before going to the NFL draft are so fucking stupid. Like, let the guy enjoy college. Like, I get it. They don't get paid. I fully understand that. And they should. I think for likeness and things like that. But let the guy enjoy being a college athlete. It's fun. He's going to be the big man on campus for two more years at Clemson. He is going to be the shit. And that should be fun. They should enjoy that. And also, and I said this yesterday, but it bears repeating, just because Trevor Lawrence is the god, do not expect Graham Mertz to do similar things next year. Trevor Lawrence is a deity. Like, let's put it out there. He is that damn good. He was awesome. He just shredded the Alabama defense. That secondary had questions early in the year, and they had kind of fixed it. Then they didn't. And a bad look for Deontay Thompson, who is a potential Packer prospect. Do not want him. Get him off your draft boards, in my opinion. But I know some may say otherwise. But yeah, so that'll do it for the show. Yes, I knew I was going to mention the Brewers and Mad Bomb. I guess there's interest either way. He has 1 year left on his deal. Is Corey Way worth that? I don't know, Jim. I'm not sure. I can see both sides of that argument. I think there is a case to be made that where does Corey Ray fit with this team in a few years, but when is Ryan Braun going to kind of run out of gas? And once Ryan Braun runs out of gas, you could replace him with a guy like Ray. So is he worth holding on for that reason? Or do you believe you're as close as a Madison Baumgartner addition to your team to taking you to the World Series? And if you are, then I think you go out and get Mad Bomb, even if you know you can't re-sign him next year, because that means that it's World Series or bust time, and you need that guy to put you over the top. And I think a guy like Mad Bomb would do that for the Brewers. So we'll keep an eye on that as well. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. We'll do another Daily Tap. We'll talk the Freak and the Beard. We'll probably see what the any other Matt LaFleur takes, see if there's any shitty ones we can make fun of, and also talk about any other things that come across the wire. All right, take care, guys. Have yourself a great day. We'll talk tomorrow. See you. Bye.